Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. Welcome to the Voices of Courage show. These shows are for you, to be able to upshift your thinking, your consciousness, be able to bring that new thinking into your home, your community, your nation, and be able to really live in harmony, coherence with one another. That's why I do these shows, and I hope you'll appreciate what we do here. We've got some very powerful guests that we bring on these shows every single week, and they're people that don't just have another point of view. They have solutions, and they've lived it. You know, I go to calls, and if you get to the cause, you can get to the solution, right? And a lot of times, the solutions aren't exactly what we think they're going to be. We have to think outside the box. Today, I'm speaking with a guest that has experience in the Middle East, and you know, we're on the verge of hopefully some breakthroughs in that area, so that we can have peace. You know, it never ceases to amaze me in this day and age why we can't have peace around the world. It blows my mind. And you know, I know there's some bad actors out there, and you know, those bad actors seem, the only thing that seems to work with them is force. But you know, there are some other solutions. I think, you know, from my point of view in the Middle East, we have to get back to the peace table. We have to get back to a regional framework for peace. And that includes, you know, all the stakeholders, you know, the Israelis, the Palestinians, the Gulf states. I think we all need to come together somehow. Like, listen, I'm not the diplomat, but we got some great diplomats out there right now. I think Marco Rubio is going to help us in this place. I'm counting on him. You know, we need to figure out some economic solutions. I believe that, you know, if we work together in business and harmony together, you know, I put my business in your country, you put it in my country. Now we have a common interest of why we want to work together. But here's what I've also found. You see, there's a solution for everything. It's always there's a spiritual solution for everything. Now, I use the word spiritual very loosely, okay? There is definitely, when we can tune in to God, to our consciousness, to that place that we all, you know, listen, man, the neuroscience scientists, the quantum physicists, general scientists, they've all figured out at this point that when you get down to the micro or get to the macro, there's something greater than all of us here that's driving all of this. And, you know, it's that place where we live from the soul. The soul is there in all things and all people. We have to get down to that level to understand how we're all connected. We're all connected. What I do impacts you. What you do impacts me at some level. Most people can't think in those terms, but we need to think in that term. And we need to come up with solutions that include understanding that if we live from a place of oneness, again, what I just said, okay, what I do impacts you, what you do impacts me. We can get to that point, start to see it from a point of view that whether you are a atheist, whether you're a Jew, whether you're a Catholic, whether you're a Christian, whether you're a Hindu, whether you're a Muslim, at some level, we're not all that. We are souls, right? Just the United States. I'm not red. I'm not blue. Okay. I have a soul. Okay. And so are you. And we have to start thinking from that point of view, what's highest and best for everybody that's involved. I also believe we need to have reform. If we want real peace, we have to educate. We got to educate differently. You know, it's time to let go of hatred in our educational systems. And listen, most countries aren't teaching hatred in their systems, but it is there, okay? This country's bad. My belief is right. Your belief is wrong. You know, that's got us where we are. We've got to stop this. It's not right or wrong, good or bad, okay? It's something else. And we have to understand we are all here growing and learning and evolving. And again, there's bad actors on the planet. They don't want to listen to any of this. They don't want to hear any of this. They just want to do it their way. That way of thinking needs to be upshifted. And if enough of us upshift and hold intention that we're going to have peace in this planet, we will. We'll have peace in the Middle East. And, you know, the other part of this, I think there's got to be grassroots community involvement here, where we all say, enough is enough. I'm sick and tired of war. I'm ready to have something different. That's my point of view. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have my guest, who has a lot more information to share with you on the subject. We'll be right back.
Whether because of discomfort, lack of mobility, your lifestyle, or occupation, you sit inactively way too many hours a day. Introducing Ellipse, the premium quality automatic seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation without physical strain or impact.
It is so quiet that none of my coworkers even know I'm using it.
Strengthen and tone your legs. Increase your mobility, flexibility, and balance. Plus, stimulate healthy circulation.
My joints feel better, my knees feel better, my back feels better. It makes me feel stronger too.
Perfect for home therapy. Whisper quiet to use while you work.
My circulation is moving, I'm burning calories, and it makes me feel energetic.
Call now and order Ellipse, the seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation. Call and get upgraded to the deluxe bundle. Get the faster motor for 5 miles of steps per hour, the step counter, the sport mat, and wireless remote. Call now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster, and I have a very special guest today, Elio Zamati. Elio, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So glad you're here. For those of you that don't know Emilio, he's a writer, journalist, filmmaker, and entrepreneur whose life spans continents and disciplines. He was born in Egypt and educated in France and England. Elio witnessed firsthand the political upheaval and cultural richness of the mid-20th century Cairo. His career includes serving as a publisher, screenwriter, television director, as well as building several companies and a global leader subtitling and dubbing services. Currently based in L.A., in Ojai, California, Elio is an advocate for sustainable living and urban agricultural through his company. Oh, wow. Okay, man, it's great to have you here on the show. And I know you got your new book out, too. We're going to talk about that. Elio, you know, you heard my monologue there. Any thoughts or comments about that?
Oh, I totally concur with what you said. I do believe that peace is possible because we are above ideologies. We are, like you said, souls, individuals. And if enough of us want peace, I think we'll reach it.
I think so. Yeah.
War and racism and all these ills are really caused by bad actors. And I believe they can be defeated. I think there's a lot more people of goodwill than there are evil people on earth.
Well, I concur with you 100%. And, you know, I think that, you know, when bad actors are allowed to, you know, proliferate and get their ideologies out into the world, it impacts all of us. It impacts all of us in a negative way. And, you know, like I said, you know, in the monologue, I personally am sick and tired of not having peace on the planet. A whole bunch of people are. You know, I sit here in the United States in my comfortable house and, you know, but listen, I watch what war does. I see the devastation it does to mothers and to children and to families and the communities. And in this modern day and age, why that continues to proliferate is beyond me. It really is. I don't get it.
True. Absolutely. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. Listen, you were brought up in Egypt, and I'd like you to share how the Suez Canal affected your family, community, and sense of identity. as you were growing up?
Well, it played a major role because it was the reason Egypt changed radically. It actually first started with the creation of the State of Israel, which Arab countries surrounding Palestine did not agree with, and started a series of war, which not only changed things on the terrain, but changed things for all the Jewish communities around the Arab world. There were more than a million Jews in Egypt, Iraq, Iran, well, there's still some in Iran, but Lebanon, and there are almost none left as a result of that initial war, and as a result of the Suez War, which happened in 1956. And that involved France, Great Britain, and Israel. And it basically finished the job done after the war with Israel by eliminating the vast majority of the European and Jewish communities in Egypt and the rest of the Arab world. Now, that was a world that had its flaws. There's nothing terribly positive. Well, there's little very positive about colonialism and whatnot, but people lived in some kind of relative harmony among the three Abrahamic religions, and that is no longer true anywhere in the Middle East, and that's a very, very sad result of that war. It brought so many changes in the fabric of Egyptian society that nothing was ever possible again in terms of that solidarity.
Well, let's fast forward that's interesting, because that's the basis, is what I'm hearing. That's kind of where things really started to shift back then.
Yes.
And now, you know, we've got, you know, an us versus them again scenario, which we've had for so many years. And let's just talk about how do we change this? How do we change this up now and get back to something that is past normal? Maybe it's more in I would say, coherence with everybody being able to live together in the Middle East. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think that there's an opportunity here because the Arab countries are intervening in this process. Until now, it was primarily the United States acting as a mediator, but whatever results they had were partial. The peace treaty with Egypt was only involved Egypt. The peace treaty with Jordan only involved Jordan. And we are now at a stage where it has to be a joint effort on the part of all the participants in the area, and not just the European or the American facilitators. And the fact that Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the others are involved in attempts at a solution is promising in itself.
Yeah, that's progress. It, you know, and I also talked in the monologue about, you know, creating economic cooperation. And, you know, like I said, you know, if you're my business is in Egypt and my business is in Iran and in Saudi Arabia, you know, it makes more sense for me not to go to war with you if I've got economic concerns in the different states. What's your thought around that?
Absolutely. I mean, the tragedy of the Middle East right now, which again started way back when, is that there hasn't been a true attempt at creating a Palestinian state, for instance, which is a fundamental need for any human to have a country of his or her own. And everybody has been involved but the Palestinians in their own fate, it seems. We now have this opportunity, in spite of all the attempts at creating further occupations, I would say, in Gaza, for instance, we really have the opportunity to find a solution that benefits the local people primarily, and then its opponent, Israel, and the rest of the country. I mean, there is no reason why Palestine has been a pariah in the Middle East for 80 years. And granted, they've had their reasons like terrorism and whatnot to halt any possible progress. But that's a minority in the Palestinian fabric society. And I think that this is the best possible time after all this destruction on both sides, but the brunt of it being innocent Palestinians, to just have a talk in which everybody's interest is taken care of. And we haven't had that except various attempts through history. If you remember under Clinton and under Carter, and whether there were attempts at peace that failed, it's time.
Well, it's time. That's right. There have been many attempts, and which is fine. But you know, we've got to learn from our attempts. We've got to learn from what worked and what didn't work. And you know, one of the challenges, and I'm glad you brought out the war and destruction. You know, for the Palestinian community, for the mothers and the children. You know, the same thing in Israel. Moms and kids, and you know, this is ridiculous. We gotta figure out some solutions here. You know, why we allow you know, regimes to come in, and here's the thing: it all comes out of lack and limiting thinking. It all comes out of I, me, and mine. Okay, it's like I don't have, you know, there's just not enough for me. I've got to take what you have. This is mine. It's been mine for a million years, you know, through history. We gotta isn't there some re-education that probably has to take place here?
Absolutely.
I want you to answer that, but I gotta take a quick break. So we'll take a break. We come back. Let's talk about the educational piece around the Middle East. We'll be right back.
Imagine, this is your money, and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. Guess what? They want your money, and they can take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter right over here that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash, and we're going to take it from you right now. So what do? You fight back by letting our team of experts work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And hey, we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws, and we'll fight really hard to save your money. So, if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket. 5 minutes of your time right now can save you thousands of dollars. And the best part, it's a free call, so please call right now.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster, and I'll get right back with my guest in just 1 minute. I want to let you know that you can now subscribe on the YouTube station. We have a YouTube station there. It's got youtube.com. Look for the Courage Network. You can subscribe there so you won't miss a show. Plus, you'll be able to share these shows with your family and friends. I know you want to do that so we can all upshift our thinking in so many ways. All right. Well, let me get back to my guest. Elio Zarmati has, by the way, before we answer that question on the education, I want to mention to everybody, Elio has a book out there. It's called Goodbye. I can't see that. T-A-H-R-I-R, Tahrir Square. Okay. Tell me about where people can get the book, Elio.
Oh, they can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Blackwell, bookshop.org, or the publishers.
Cool.
And it's posted on the various places are posted on my website, zarmati.com.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll play that on the screen. Zarmati, Zarmati.com for my listening audience, Zarmati.com. And I probably mispronounced the Tahrir, is it? Tahrir Square?
Tahrir Square. Tahrir Square is a big, huge square at the center of Cairo, which had seen every demonstration, political and cultural, that have marked Egypt on every level. Every revolution had started with crowds amassing in Tahrir Square. And it was a landmark in my youth because I lived at the edge of Tahrir Square in a small street. And my parents were divorced when I was 4 years old, which was something that wasn't done in those days in that society. And I used to cross the square to go from one parent to the other back and forth. And so it's a key part of my youth. I've also witnessed the revolution as a child. I was 7 years old when the 1952 revolution happened that kicked out King Farouk. And the Suez Wars, at the beginning of the Suez War in 1956, I was 11 years old and it was at my doorstep. And so I was able to live through all that extraordinary trauma that was taking over Egypt. And so it's a very special place, not only for me personally, which it is, but also for every Egyptian born person in that country.
So why did you name it Goodbye Tahrir Square? Why?
Well, as a consequence of the Suez War, all the French, British, and a large number of Jews were expelled from Egypt. My father and I happened to be unable to leave from 1956 to 1960 when we finally emigrated to France. And those years were both amazing in terms of my growth as a kid and the changes in society that made it what it is today, which is no longer a secular country, no longer a tolerant country, no longer a cosmopolitan country, but something completely different. And I happen to have a lot of respect and affection for the Egypt that was back then. And it also, you know, I would like my readers and your listeners to know that war and revolution may be extremely destructive, but life goes on while it's happening. People grow up, people learn, people get an education, kids fall in love, they discover literature. Life is much stronger than the destruction of a war or a revolution. And that's really why I wanted to write the book, because it's not a political book at all. It's a book of a young boy growing up in the middle of this nonsense.
So it's a historical book. It gives the history. And I think that the history is so important, because if we don't know where we've come from, we don't know the mistakes that we've made in the past, then it's easy to recreate the same mistakes in the future. And so why, Ilya, why did you write the book?
Well, I thought a number of reasons. One is I encounter total ignorance about Egypt and the Middle East, at least in that, you know, people know what's going on now, but they have no idea of the history. And one of my beliefs about the possibility of peace is that I lived in a society that was tolerant, that was united, that was cosmopolitan, in which religion mattered not at all. I had friends of every religion. When I was growing up in Cairo, and so it is possible. And the experience of Jews in the Middle East, from the Arab conquest to this day, or at least to the mid-50s, proves that peace is entirely possible between Jews, Arabs, and Christians. The other thing is that if you don't know the history of the Middle East, it's hard to really understand what's going on today. Yeah. And it's something I wanted to share with my readers.
Sounds fascinating. I know I want to pick it up because I want to know more and more about the history of the Middle East from different points of view. There are so many different points of view, and it's important to know those points of view. You know, one of the things you bring up right now is a community, an ecumenical community where we have Jews, Muslims, Hindus, Christians, Catholics. I think that's an important element to a healthy society where we're diverse. I'm not saying that you can't have sections where it's all Christian or it's all Muslim, but I think we have to understand how to learn to get together, because at some level we are all souls. And, you know, there is a lot of history, and I'll just take it personally. I'll say this. I tried living at one point in my life from all of my resentments, my anger, my greed, my judgments, my criticism. I tried living from that point of view. And, you know, and what it got me, it seemed to attract a lot more, situations where I got even more angry, more upset, wanted more, couldn't have enough, you know, just on a personal level. And I know on a macro level, that's the same thing. If we don't let go of our past histories of what we think was right or wrong or this or that, if we live from the past, we usually create a future that looks a lot like the past. So if we need to start to say, well, wait a second, I'm ready to forgive. And I know that's really hard for a lot of people. If I had a family member that was killed, or, you know, my mother, my sister, my brother, my uncle, my dad, you know, that would be hard to forgive. But I know it's possible. And I know that we have to let go of the past to be able to create a bright future. I don't know what the thinking in the Middle East is. You probably have a little more handle on that. But is, you know, can we do that, right?
I think the vast majority of the people believe that. Unfortunately, everybody in the Middle East right now, Israel, the Palestinians, are ruled by a minority of extremists. The vast majority of the people in Gaza or in Palestine want peace. They're people with families, they jobs and all that, and they want to continue to live peacefully. The people who prevent that are a minority, and possibly the majority will prevail. The same thing is in Israel. The current government does not represent most Israelis, but it is in power because of the political system that enabled tiny minorities to have the most powerful voice in the government. But you look at what's happening on the street, and it's a totally different story. My hope is that that part of the population in both places will prevail.
Yeah, no, mine is too. And, you know, it's interesting politically. You know, I always question, why is it that in so many countries that the ones that are kind of the sociopaths, to say they're not, you know, I'm not naming any country, but I can sure look around the world and say, you know, there's a lot of people that don't seem to care about anything about except for, you know, their own power, their own money, their own greed. And these are the ones that seem to elevate to the top of government. I'm not sure why that is, but I sure see it. What do you say?
Well, I think that it is because they're more organized, they're ready to fight, whereas most people have a tendency to mind their own business and aren't hungry for power. It's those people, which are a tiny a part of society, that prevail because they fight for it.
Well, they fight for it, and I think there's a part of them that that don't care. You know, they don't care if people are killed. They don't care, you know, about they're just, you know, they rationalize why it's okay to kill people. They rationalize why it's okay for them to make more money than they deserve. They rationalize why it's okay to overtake another country or. They're in their mind, they act, and then of course they rationalize it. Then they attract people that, you know, they that believe their same thing. You know, I've always said this. You know, the most dangerous person on the planet is the con man, right? The con person, right?
Yeah.
Because he believes his own thinking. He believes it. He's so dangerous because he believes that he's right. And if you got somebody that's conning themselves, that doesn't see reality clearly, doesn't see where they're hurting, doesn't see the impact of their decisions, if you got that person in power, what happens is that it creates misery and suffering for many, many, many people. And I think that's what's going on at a psychological level for many years in these countries.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So the solution... Read Ilio's book to know the history. And then, you know, we have to be proactive. You're right. Good people doing nothing creates problems for all of us too, right? It's hard when you feel like if you speak out in, you know, and we had this going on in our country. I felt it, you know, the past administration where I would say something, I would not comfortable putting it out on the social media because I know that my Facebook account would be censored or my YouTube would be shut down. I you know, that was going on in our country. I believe that that's opened up now, so we have free press again. But I can imagine in some of the Middle Eastern countries, it's the same thing. There really is not a free press, and I think that's an issue.
That's the biggest issue, I think, that has existed in most, if not all, of the Middle East for the past 70, 80, 90 years. Just about every country in the Middle East has been a strongman type of society, whether it's a president, a king, or whatever. And Israel was the only democracy with a free press. However, it's taken a turn toward one party ruling to the exclusion of at least half of the country that feels the other way. And so it doesn't look good, but I'm still hopeful that just the sheer quantity of misery that this last year has experienced will change the minds of the people everywhere in that conflict.
I think you're right, and I you know what I've learned is, you know, it's even in our personal lives, it's I believe God created this world perfectly, and that you know, if there's enough pain, eventually you either die or you change. That's it. You're gonna die or change. You get enough pain, and you know, pain, of course, is a suffering is a warning sign that we're off base. It's very clear. If you're suffering, you're in a lot of pain, you're off base, you're going down the wrong path. And if we could just recognize that even on an individual basis, right? Even when you listen, you got aches and pains in your body, it's your body telling you, change what you're doing. Okay. It's very simple.
Absolutely.
It's not complicated. And it's the same thing up on a macro level, on the socioeconomic level. If we are going down the wrong path, there are warning signs. There are things that we need to change. And if we don't, it gets worse and worse and worse. So if we don't stifle this, we don't stop these wars, eventually they're going to escalate. And eventually it's going to impact more and more people until there's enough pain that it finally stops. That's what I know. All right, listen, I got to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'll talk a little bit more about Elio's book and a little bit about how it's impacted the people that have read it. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone watching at home. We're here to remind you that if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have live agents available right now to answer your questions and tell you how much your case is potentially worth. Hi, I'm Gina Belich here with spokesman and TV personality Tom Mustin with us in the Help Center. So, Tom, phones are really busy over there. Tell us what kind of calls you're seeing.
Well, Gina, first off, thank you for having me here in the call center with you. We always enjoy talking to the viewers and getting folks the compensation that they deserve. You know, we're seeing calls about all kinds of accidents, but the most common by far has been car accidents. So if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, give us a call right now. You'll speak with a live person. They'll answer any questions you have and tell you if you have a case and how much your case is potentially worth.
Thanks, Tom. All right, folks at home, you heard it. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here. Did you know that I wear hearing aids? I love my hearing aids, and I am here to help you get a deal on the same brand I wear.
Don't waste thousands on expensive hearing aids when you can get MD Hearing's revolutionary Neo hearing aids for just $297 a pair. The Neo is a true hearing aid, not an amplifier. With rechargeable technology many customers say is superior to more expensive models. And you can get two Neo hearing aids with a 45-day risk-free trial, free shipping, and free lifetime U.S.-based support for only $297. The Neo is nearly invisible with its tiny in-the-ear canal design.
Call my friends at MD Hearing and get the over-the-counter hearing aids that I use for you.
Call now and get not one, but two Neo hearing aids for just $297.
800-789-7885. Again, that's 800-789-7885.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm talking with author Elio Zamardi, and he's got a new book out, which we're going to put up on the screen right now again so that you can check it out. It's called Goodbye at Tahrir Square, and Elio Zamardi, Z-A-R-M-A-T-I. You can find it on his website or over on Amazon. you know, in the book, you talk about the weight of exile and the emotional and psychological toll of leaving your homeland and the challenges of building a new life in a foreign country. That I think is so applicable today, Elio, about, you know, some of the proposals in the Middle East of having the Palestinians move out of the, you know, the Gaza Strip and relocate into Egypt and different Arab countries. Let's talk about that, man. How was that for you? And you write about that in the book.
My experience has been that my family, as a result of the Suez War, is dispersed in all the continents, all five continents. A large majority of my paternal family went to Israel, but also to France, to Great Britain, to basically any country that would give us asylum after the expulsion from Egypt. On my mother's side, they're mostly in the United States and in France. But because I have the Zarmati.com site, I get emails and letters from people all around the world bearing that name saying, how are we related? So the extraordinary pain of separation of families is the result of these policies, which is why I don't concur with you on the current administration, but we're both civilized enough to agree to disagree on that. I think that the proposal to kick the Palestinians out of Gaza it will not work, is inhumane, and every emphasis should be to manage to alleviate the pain of that population myself.
Well, by the way, I just want to clarify that. I'm not saying I'm for that. I'm just saying that that's one of the solutions that's on the table. So, yes.
I get that. I get that. Absolutely. I think that the idea of expelling anybody from their native land, I think, is the most cruel thing there is in the world. And just now, Egypt, along with other Arab countries, had offered a proposal that consists of rebuilding with the population in place by creating temporary housing until they're rebuilt to decent housing for the people. And unfortunately, we have rejected it. And I don't see any other viable solution presented right now.
It seems like there needs to be not one choice, not black and white. You rebuild and stay in place. Don't go to another. It's like, how about choice here? You know, you have the choice to maybe immigrate to another country. You have the choice to stay there and rebuild. You have the choice to I don't know, you know, give me five choices of what I could do. I'm living in the country. That's what I would want. I'd like to make my own choice and, you know, and help me do that.
Absolutely. Right. And there are a lot of Palestinian immigration, just as there is Jewish immigration. In America, particularly, I've been involved in, you know, peace activities, and met with a large number of Palestinian immigrants. And it's partially for them that I wrote the book, because they do not know their own history beyond the last 20, 30 years, if they're that old. Most of them are 20-something.
Yeah. Well, you know, Elio, where you know, in Christian Bible, it says, you know, where there is no vision, the people perish. And I think we need to have a new vision. I think your book gives a new vision, gives hope to people. You know, vision, you know, again, I think we need more choice. I think we need to help everybody with a new vision of what the Middle East can really be in the next, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, you know, how we can come together and thrive together instead of fighting each other. There are solutions for this.
Absolutely. And that coexistence. I mean, one of the lux of my experience has been that, you know, my native language is French, and I went to French schools in Cairo. And when, after the war, those schools were closed, I went to Jesuit schools. And I grew up with that economical atmosphere that leads me to believe that we can all share in our life.
I love it. Well, listen, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being here today, and much success on the new book. I believe that, you know, everybody in my audience needs to read about the history of the Middle East, and you can get it at Goodbye Tahrir Square with the Elio and let's spell his last name, Tarmati. Okay, so you can find that on Amazon. Elio, again, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And thank you, all of you, for watching today. I hope you'll pass this show on to those that you love and care about so that we can step into a new way of seeing life, living life, and working in harmony together. From my heart to your heart, may you continue to see the unseeable and know the unknowable and do the impossible.